Hi everyone, I'm Joe and I am an alcoholic.
We love you, Joe.
Thank you, I love you too. Oh, Dominique, I love you. I dedicate this whole speech to Dominique. Because it's all about you, babe. All right, good, I got you laughing. Because now we're going to get serious. Okay, I'm going to, how long am I speaking for? Listen, this is how prepared I am. 20-ish. Okay. Yeah, try to get me to leave after 20 minutes, people. Okay, qualify. I am an alcoholic. I'm also a really and truly grateful member of Al-Anon, the Fellowship of Heroes. After a few years of sobriety and realizing I pretty much wanted to kill all of you on a daily basis, someone suggested I go to Al-Anon. Actually, he pleaded, please, Joe, go to Al-Anon. And I did. But I'm going to share my AA story briefly for 20 minutes-ish. I'm a woman. And I get told I'm a woman so many times you would think it would keep me sober, but it doesn't. I'm an alcoholic just like everyone else in this room, and I could die tomorrow if I don't work the steps and if I'm not being of service and if I don't show up. So there. I was also one of the absolutely youngest people to ever walk into an AA meeting in the town where I first got sober. So I was 18, I had a baby on my hip, and I was a woman. So I've told a few people this today, so you know, you can take a nap. for a year, they were like carrying me around at conventions like a golden calf. She's 18, and she's a woman, and she goes to our group. It works if you work it. We have a woman in our group, and she's a flaming homosexual. So I was like, a woman, I'm queer, and I was young. I mean, these guys didn't have to do any outreach for years after that, because we were home. It's too bad I'm white as cocaine, so. Anyway. I haven't been sober since I was 18, but I've been in the rooms, as they say, since I was 18. I got sober on June 15, 2003. So it's 14 years sober. Thank you. If I'm ever nervous when I speak, it's when I say that, because now it's like, God, I told them I'm 14 years sober. I have to say something clever. It's much easier when you're like 14 minutes and you can go up and just be cute. And people will applaud and say, wow, that was amazing. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I sponsor anyone who asks me and do as I tell them. Because I don't have time for coffee. AA is not a social club. This is the serious part. I got sober way up north in Sweden, where the sun literally don't shine for 6 months of the year, and then constantly shines for 6 months of the year, and I'm bipolar. So it was like asking for it. In a group full of men who were all in their 60s and over, and for 10 years I was in and out. I wasn't the 18-year-old newcomer who stayed, unfortunately. I was the 18-year-old newcomer who went out drinking, almost lost her life a few times, almost lost her kids a few times, eventually ended up losing almost everything, and not once in 10 years did anyone offer to help me with the steps. It wasn't a safe place. First I was a golden calf of nothing, because I didn't have a solution. I didn't have any step work. I didn't believe in God. I hardly believed in you. I went there because it was the only place I was welcome. When I finally gave up, every time anyone does that, I'm like, yes, you want to ask something? I teach sometimes, so that's why. I finally got sober in June 15, 2003, after a three-day bender from hell. I woke up in a strange apartment with a strange person in the bed next to me. We were both naked, and I had no memory of what I had done for the last 3 days. I called up a woman in AA, and I said, I'm willing to do anything. Ask me, and I'll do it. Anything. She's like, good. Finally, because they had seen me coming in and out for 10 years, drinking coffee and taking up their space. And the next day she called me and she's like, are you ready? I'm like, yes, but I'm not gonna go to a meeting every day. And the minute I said that, I realized that this is alcoholism. Yesterday I was willing to sell my firstborn to survive. I was willing to do anything to get sober. And 24 hours later, I was willing, but. And it scared the living hell out of me because I realized that if I listen to this, I'm gonna die for sure. And I wanted to live. But. I have no idea how long I've been talking, so anyone just start yell or something. I went back to the meetings. I had heard in the grapevine that someone had worked the steps who wasn't a male. And I asked her, could you help me? And she said, yes, I'll come by your house tomorrow. And then, oh, it died. That's what we call a cliffhanger. No, it's on? I know how to work an on and off button. All right. Hello? Hello? That's what we call a cliffhanger. And then, dot, dot, dot. Where was I? Steps! Yes! Let's talk about the steps. Almost every day for 3 months, this insane woman who had been sober like 15 minutes longer than me came to my house with a big book and lots of pens and lots of cigarettes and coffee and sugar, and we did the steps in like 3 months. And then she gave me a big bag of big books, and I made business cards. I was 3 months sober, and it says, Joe, call me if you want to get sober. And then I traveled around the region where I lived, up in the north where the sun didn't shine. And I told everyone, I can help you get sober. Oh, good, I've been sober 15 years. Yeah, but you haven't done it right. I'm here to tell you. And I did that for a year, and honestly, there was a need. What does this mean? Can you hear me in the back? Okay, good. There was a great need for people to help you with the steps, and me and my insane sponsor, who had been sober 15 minutes longer than me, we took 63 women through the big book in a year. And most of them are still sober, and most of them are still sponsoring women. And I'm saying this not to make myself look good, but I do. No, I'm saying this because I've been in the rooms long enough to see people come in and leave without the solution or any hope or anything but coffee and a cookie. And if they're really unlucky, a couple of phone numbers to men who don't want the what's best for them. And that's not how you get sober. I got sober because I was surrounded with this insane woman and some other really badass people who protected me, took care of me, told me how to do the steps, told me how to pass it on, told me to stick to the women, and told me to never stop going, never say no to service, and always be there whenever anyone needs help, because I am responsible for that. So here I am in Belgium. So I've been sober 14 years. It's funny how always when you start talking about like life and death, service, it's not so funny anymore. Because just a few days ago, a friend of mine, a few people in this room knows him too, passed away. And I went here and I was like, okay, I'm going to this convention. I don't know a lot of people there. I don't feel very inspired. I just wanted to like stay home, eat candy and feel sorry for myself, or like go to meetings and meet my home group. And then someone said, you know what? You once told me that you have to go where AA tells you to go. So when Sarah asked me to come, this is where I wanted to be. And I'm really grateful for that. It's not my notes, it's stuff I've heard over the weekend. How long do I have? 10? Really? Oh, wow. What to talk about now? Okay, so the theme, to thine own self be true. I am a member of a home group called YPAA Malmö. I don't know if you're familiar with what young people in AA are. Are you? Yeah? Okay. And a big part of my sobriety, I mean, I could tell some war stories too, but they all ended with me like smelling of piss and being dragged away by police. It wasn't pretty. I was really ugly drunk, like a really sad, ugly drunk. It was not nice, and it wasn't romantic, and it wasn't love at first sight when I started drinking. I never understood why people say that. Like, love had nothing to do with my drinking. It was empty, it was ugly, and it was dirty, and I hurt a lot of people. And not all of them are back in my life just because I did the steps. I shared about that today when at a step meeting, that when you make amends, most stories I hear is that I made amends and then they forgave me and everything was fine, and that's not my experience. Not everyone has been waiting for me to get sober so I can come back and apologize. I thought they were, but they weren't. And my fourth step was huge. I was really, really just every name, because I was angry at so many people. It was the woman who worked at the grocery store when I was 12. I mean, the amount of resentment I had towards this poor woman was amazing. But there was my kids, of course. I have two children, two sons, both total AA kids. They usually come with me to conventions, but now they grew up and got all independent. And it wasn't like I could look my oldest son in the eyes and said, I'm sorry. You know, that was not gonna cut it. I had to really make amends and ask him and give him lots of space to be angry at me and to hate me, and he did. He was really, really angry at me. But life moves on, and I realized early on that to make amends is not to say, I'm not even allowed to say I'm sorry. My sponsor would tell me no if I did that. I have to prove, I have to show them, I have to change. So this is where YPA comes in, because AA got me sober. It saved my life, no doubt. There's other solutions out there, but none of them worked for me. I couldn't go to therapy. They got sick of listening to me. I mean, the only like progress I did that for the first year was my mom's fault, and then it was my dad's fault for the rest of the therapy sessions. So, you know, I needed something that was forcing me to look at myself. And then I went to meetings for a few years and I got sober, and things didn't really change for me. I traveled around like this crazy AA person and told people that they had done it wrong. For years, people would roll their eyes when I walked into the room. They were like, ugh, not her again. What is she doing here? And it got me sober. It kept me sober. It was a little insane, I admit that, but it kept me sober. But after a few years, I just felt stuck. Like, All I do is AA. This is what I want my life to look like. And the alternative was to leave. Like, that's the only alternative I knew, living in this really small town where most of the men that I went to meetings with were retired, and we didn't really have a lot in common, you know, except the program. I mean, they tried, but, you know, we just didn't have a lot in common. So I moved. I did a geographical. I'm going to move to Stockholm, the capital. Life is going to be much greater there. And and I moved. I, you know, with both of my kids, rented a house and moved, got myself a new sponsor, and started going to WIPA meetings and started going to conventions. And then I found an LGBTQ meeting, which for me was really, really nice, because I had been told in AA to not talk about my partner, because my partner at that time wasn't a man. And I needed to sit in rooms and look at people and listen to people where I could feel safe and share about whatever I want without getting like a, oh, really? She's a lesbian? Which I'm not. I don't identify as that, but that's another topic. I'm queer. I still, to this day, want to have a sponsor who is older than me, because I'm an orphan. I don't have any parents. And I really like love the older women in AA. I will follow them anywhere. Just tell me and I'll be there, like a little puppy. There's nothing better than a 60-year-old woman in AA with like 25 years of sobriety. I'm your slave. Let me help you. Because when I got sober, I couldn't find them. So any woman I found, I was like, I can't stop thinking about you. And they were like, okay. Is this a mommy issue? I'm like, no. Please give me your phone number. Where are you going next summer? And I just would like show up at conventions in their home groups. And they would be like, who is this crazy person? I'm flattered, but like, oh, really? But I just realized how much I need that. I needed AA to have some reflection of my life out there. I needed younger people. Not because the older people couldn't help me, but because the younger people taught me how to live and how to dance for 6 hours until my toenails turned blue on New Year's Eve in Stavanger. Thank you, Dominic. and they had to. I had to have some sober people to walk in the Pride Parade with. I needed people who became parents in not so traditional families and got sober. I needed to talk to people where I didn't have to explain who I was before we got to the alcoholic part. Does that make sense? I'm so happy to hear that. And it's not that I was looking for something better then. I was just looking for something that was more for me. And today I travel a lot, but I only go where there's AA events or AA friends. I have this awesome little international tribe of like traveling circus freaks, what I like to call them. And we meet up in different countries and go to conventions together. And some of them have been my friends for the last 10 years. And whenever one of us goes away or passes away or dies, it just really affects all of us. And just 2 seconds of Al-Anon. I called a couple of friends today. I'm like, I feel very affected about this death. I don't know what to do. I'm having a lot of conflicted feelings because it's not always saints that pass away, you know, that die. And my Al-Anon friends were like, yeah, it's okay, you know, sorrow. And then I called my Al-Anon sponsor. She's like, get over yourself. You don't have to grieve. You don't have to feel anything. You don't have to do anything. Just, you know, you're on a beach in Belgium. Just be, go to a meeting. Like, that's all you have to do. Do the next right thing. So I went to this Al-Anon meeting and I heard the most awesome thing. I just have to share. I always write up like really good things. I went to a AA meeting and someone said, if you have a problem with alcohol, I think it was a speaker yesterday. Stop drinking. If you have a problem with alcoholism, try the program. Was that right?
Yeah.
And then it's like, someone said today, designer AA, if you want real AA, go to a hospital, find a sick alcoholic to work with. And then I went to Al-Anon. And a newcomer says, say what I mean what I say, and not be mean. It's so different. In AA, it's like, rah, 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 just do your rule. And in Al-Anon, it's like, yeah, you know, just don't be mean. I love it. WIPA, identification. Yes, I mean, I think my friend Chris wrote to me before, and I said, listen, Chris, I feel a little out of it. I feel a little confused and haven't slept much. Okay, is that like, yeah. But, and I said, I usually try to be a little prepared, and I, you know, have some really good, some funny stories. And he's like, it doesn't matter if you're confused or messed up or whatever, just go there and be honest, like say whatever comes to mind. And when anyone asks me about AA, I always tell them it's my friends that are the most important things. It's the first year of insane sponsoring I did with all the 63 women that I took through the steps, even if they thought I was completely nuts, which I was. And it's always like the conventions and the special interest groups that I highly recommend anyone to start if you feel the need to. Don't wait for anyone else to do it. If you're missing something in the fellowship, you create the fellowship you crave. It's, if anyone needs help with that, talk to me. If anyone needs sponsoring around that, talk to me. And if you're ever in Malmö, come to my home group. We meet on Wednesdays for a big book study every Wednesday. We don't mess around with anything else. We just read the big book. And then the LGBTQ meetings is on Sundays, and I would love to see all of you there at some point. I think I'm gonna stop there. Yeah, thank you.